We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars, where I am joined by Shane Evans. She is the president and co-founder of Massage Heights. Thanks for joining us from San Antonio. Very fun to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So for those who aren't familiar, tell us all about Massage Heights.
Sure. Massage Heights is a San Antonio-based company that was founded by my husband and I in 2004. We are founded on basically a membership model that allows people to take advantage of regular therapeutic massage and skincare services. So it makes it really affordable and allows people to get the benefits of regular massages and skincare more frequently. And we started franchising nationally in 2007. So we're at about 155 units in the United States and Canada.
That's awesome. Yeah. So take me back to the beginning. What made you and your husband come up with this idea?
I have been a massage junkie since I was about 18 years old. I actually had my back go out after an illness. And every year from the time I was 18 until the time that we started this business, my back would literally go out and I would lay on the ground for a week or two with my legs up on a stool, flat, just trying to get out of the pain. What I was doing is actually exacerbating the injury that I had by going to the chiropractor. So the problem that I had was not skeletal, it was more muscular. And so that was making it worse. After several years of doing this, I realized, well, massage therapy is actually what I need to do instead. Started getting massage and literally the downtime was days in comparison to weeks. So I started getting it on a regular basis, understood the real benefit in it. But I didn't get it so regularly that it was preventative, because quite frankly, I thought it was too expensive. You know, it was back then, massage was probably $120, $150 for 1 hour. It just seemed sort of unattainable. And even if I would do it, I'd do it for, you know, every once in a while. It didn't seem like something I could do frequently. So kind of all started with that basis of just loving massage, understanding the benefit of it, and then realizing that there was an opportunity to create a space for people to get it more frequently, the way that I wanted to get it. And so in the holidays between 2003 and 2004, we were out on a trip visiting some friends, and I was sitting out by a fire on New Year's Eve, and I started talking about a massage experience that I had at a hotel spa recently, and that I got taken late, cut short. It wasn't very good. It was kind of fluffy. And, you know, I thought if it just was affordable, it wouldn't be so bad. If it was $40, $50 for the hour instead of $150 for the hour, that would work. And that just sort of inspired the idea to create something that we eventually created 4 months later and opened our first store.
Amazing. And I know it's evolved and pivoted to a certain extent. So share with us what it was then and what it is now.
Well, then it was very rustic. We were based in San Antonio and we didn't have a whole lot of money to open the first store. And we cashed out on, you know, our kids' Texas Tomorrow funds and savings and 401ks and any stock that we had. And we opened that first location and we did it on a shoestring. You know, it was not fancy at all. But I'll tell you what, people were coming in from all over the city that wanted the service because it was affordable. And what we saw was that people were not coming in just for, you know, relaxation. They were coming in for pain management, stress management, and they were so grateful that we were able to offer it to them at the rate that we were, so they could come in every week. So immediately that little location that was so rustic and didn't cost us a whole lot to put together gained a lot of traction. It also gained a lot of traction with massage therapists. They were coming saying, wow, this is awesome, a place that I can come and just use my hands and my heart and help people feel better and not worry about the environment, not worry about bills, not worry about marketing and accounting and all these things that they never really signed up for when they decided to become a massage therapist. They just wanted to help people. We had a lot of interest very, very quickly, and we knew that we had to expand pretty fast. And so 9 months later, from the profits of that very first location, we actually opened up our second location. We had the same result, people coming in from all over the place, and they were saying, when are you going to open another one? Are you going to put one by me? How can I get involved? I want to be an investor. I want to. And so we thought, we need to start exploring how we can really expand this brand. And And so we did. And then that was, you know, the franchising model, but it is so different now. I mean, we feel like our purpose is to elevate the lives of the people that we touch. And, the people in for us are our franchisees. And so our corporate headquarters supports those franchisees as if that was their mother, their sister, their brother. We want to elevate their lives. And then the franchisees are really ultimately responsible for elevating the lives of their team members, and helping lift them up and helping them achieve whatever it is that, you know, that they want from life, really. And then for our members and guests, of course, to elevate them by providing a really great service, in a comfortable environment where they get amazing results and the benefit from massage therapy. So we've come a long way. We're no longer rustic at all. We are very sort of spa-like, but not so spa-like that we scare our male clientele. We're probably, you know, we've got probably 60% of our clients are women and the other 40% are men. And so it's an environment that men can feel comfortable in. Most of our franchisees are both men and women. They're couples. And a lot of times you'll see the men running the front end and the women doing the back end or vice versa. So it's just a good, solid, retreat-like environment that feels upscale, but not fluffy.
Yeah, you're touching on something very important, and that's that intangible brand that makes your member, in your case, really feel something beyond, of course, they're getting a great service, a great massage, they're getting a great price, but at the end of the day, you're making them feel something. So can you speak to that a little bit about what kind of experience that you are intentionally creating inside Massage Heights?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of things to create the experience in Massage Heights. I mean, before you even walk in, most of our locations, you hear the music starting before you even open up the doors to the reception area. But we continue that experience with the music, with the essential oils, the smells that you smell. We use the finest grade linens that you can get, the thickest massage tables. We use only natural products in all of our services, and we sell a line of Heights at Home products that are the same, that they're all natural ingredients. And so those members and guests can take that experience home with them. It reminds them of Massage Heights later and that they need to schedule their massage. But, you know, I think really what we're doing is making them the better version of themselves. You know, I always say it's like 2.0, you know, it's Alex 2.0, it's Shane 2.0. Because I feel when you feel good, you ultimately can do whatever you do better. Whether it's, you know, you're a soccer mom and you're taking care of kids and you need that stress relief or that pain relief so that you feel like getting down on the floor and playing with your 2-year-old or running all across town, dropping kids at, you know, lessons and such, or you're an executive that's, you know, trying to work your way up the corporate, you know, ladder. So whatever you do, we help you do it better.
Yeah. And to your point about creating that experience, a lot of it is the customer interaction with your employees. And yeah, you got to first look at what that's like from being an undercover boss. So tell me a little bit about your philosophy when it comes to customer service.
Sure. I think that in order to provide really great guest service, you have to have happy employees. And so, you know, a lot of businesses would say that the guest comes first or the customer comes first. I say that the employee comes first. If your employee comes first, they're going to be happy. They're going to deliver on a great service. We have a unique business in the sense that the guests are coming in and they're going behind closed doors with a massage therapist, right? Or a skin therapist. You have no idea as a manager or owner or what have you, what kinds of conversations are taking place in that room. You want to make sure that that massage therapist or skin therapist is having nothing but positive conversations with that member or guest. And so I think by taking care of the employees and making them feel valued, you're able to accomplish that. For Massage Heights, we are a values-based organization. We're a family organization, and we believe that the franchisees that we bring into our system are ultimately going to dictate the culture at the store level. And so franchisees that are aligned with us culturally are so, so, so important because they're going to recruit managers that are aligned as well, and that's going to make for a great team environment.
Great. We're going to talk more about creating happy employees, building a team and great culture, also what it was like to be an undercover boss when we come back from this short break. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
I don't care if you work hard, and neither does the market. Everybody works hard. The successful people are the people who sacrifice more. If your habits are just like your friends, where they're going to Coachella and the music festivals and all those other things, or watching Netflix on binging, and you're doing all the same things as them, get out of here. You're not an entrepreneur. So if you're willing to, like, have an honest conversation with yourself, are you really willing to not go to those birthday parties, stay up till 3 a.m, and those stupid things like eat Top Ramen forever? That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. And if you're not willing to do those things, get out of here, because you're going to lose. That's the only thing I can promise you.
Hey, cyber criminals stole the W-2 forms from my friend's company.
Yeah, scammers impersonate CEOs in email and also launch attacks from compromised accounts.
What if they target us?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda Total Email Protection.
So we're secured?
Yes. Barracuda protects businesses of all sizes with artificial intelligence that blocks spear phishing, account takeover attempts, and business email compromise.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Are you drowning in IRS tax debt? Get ready for a toll-free hotline. Take advantage of new IRS tax forgiveness programs. Call Civic Tax Relief for free information now. Find out about the Fresh Start program that is now available through Civic Tax Relief. Civic Tax Relief's special tax hotline can help you discover all the relief programs you qualify for free. Just call 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Business rock stars.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are continuing our conversation with the president and co-founder of Massage Heights. So before break, we were talking about how important a work culture is, and it really starts with the employees and the leaders. So let's start with the leaders, because it starts with you guys. Sure. And it's not just you, it's you and your husband. So what is it like working with your spouse?
It's great, actually. My husband and I have clearly identified our roles and responsibilities within the organization. We had a friend who sat us down, I don't know, probably 8 years ago, and said, I think we need to have a talk. We need to help you guys get clear on some things. And, you know, it's not always perfect, but I think we play off of each other very, very well. I have a brother that's also involved. We included him in the business a couple years after we started it. And I think we just all have qualities that are complementary of one another. But in our family, we've established some ground rules. And the ground rules are basically that during family time, whether it's entire family during holidays or get-togethers or just at home, my husband and I and the kids, that we just don't talk about business. Because, you know, as the leader of the company, you know, I feel like I shouldn't have to answer to people every single day. Right? Like, I need Absolutely. To be able to do my job and such. But as an owner in the company, he always wants to know what's going on. So I say, talk to me between 8 and 5 tomorrow or at our next board meeting if it's a really big thing. So
I would imagine you have to have really good boundaries.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
So let's talk more about creating that work culture, because it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's that intangible thing that everyone knows is important, mm-hmm. but it's another story of executing and actually making sure you have that. I know you alluded to the fact that you have very clear values that you establish. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you create this work culture?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of companies in the beginning, they know that you're supposed to have a mission, vision, values, purpose, what have you, and they write these statements and things, right? And they just don't really live them. And I think we did that in the beginning accidentally. You get so busy and lost in the day-to-day stuff that you don't focus. And what happens is eventually the values just become something else that maybe you don't really want. So we took a few steps back a few years ago, probably 6 years ago, and we said, you know, who really are we, and who do we really want to be? And so the way that we maintain the values now are, you know, through the hiring process. So just making sure that somebody is not only qualified for a position, but that there's a value alignment there. Same thing with our franchisees. So when they come in, they've already been pre-qualified. They've gone through, we know that they have the skill set, the experience. We know that they have the money, the capital to be able to start the business, all of those things. When they come to San Antonio to meet with us, we are sitting down for lunch and we are just talking about who they are as people, what's important to them, what are their long-term goals? Do they have a family? How do they see themselves in the business and with that family? And just trying to figure out if we're aligned there, because they're ultimately going to create that culture within their locations. And so everything is all values-based. It's values-based hiring, values-based coaching, values-based firing, all of that.
Yeah. Let's talk about your franchisees a little bit. How do you attract the right ones?
Yeah. So I think it's a process, right? So there's a way that we go through the process. As soon as somebody comes into our pipeline as a candidate that's interested in Massage Heights, there's certain things that we're asking them to do along the way. And so one of the things is, franchisees, anybody who's willing to take a risk tends to be entrepreneurial, right? So you have these people that have, come out of corporate America or whatever else that they were doing, other companies that they've owned, and they get involved with the franchise and they want to change it sometimes because they're entrepreneurial.
Right.
So part of the process in recruiting is kind of getting them through each step and seeing if they're able to kind of follow that process. And then making sure that we're doing business consulting along the way once they've come into our system to help them continue to follow the process. And we just ask, hey, give us a year. And after you've been in the system for a year, if you've got things that you want to change, let's talk about it then. But just follow the system for a year, right? We during that observation day, use values as sort of the grounding, like, fundamental system for which we decide whether or not somebody is going to be a good fit for our system.
And I know off camera, you mentioned that in hindsight, you would have done a lot of things differently.
Yeah.
What's one of the things that you would have done differently in regards to creating a franchise or something maybe that you wish you would have known?
Yeah. The relationships with a franchisee is a very different relationship than if you owned all of your own stores. So if I owned all my own stores and I didn't like something, I would just come in and change it, right? But with franchisees, if there's something that we don't like or we want them to do things a certain way, it's really all about, coaching, counseling, help them get to whatever their goals are. It's not my goal. It can't be my goal. It's got to be their goal. And so I think what I would have done sooner is brought experienced franchise professionals in to help us. So I would have had people that had built franchise companies before, not necessarily that had worked for big franchise companies, but ones that had worked for larger ones than mine, but had helped build one from the ground up as well. Because it's got to be fast paced. You're growing a business. There's a lot that has to be done. But at the same time, you have to be thoughtful in your approach to things because you've got all of these people that are invested in you and are counting on your leadership. And so the way that you do things and the way that you communicate things is so, so very important.
And of course, you got a different look at your business when you were on Undercover Boss. What was that experience like? And what was the main takeaway, the main thing you learned from it?
To determine what our employees thought about our business and where we could improve as a business and what things that we could do as an overall brand to elevate their lives, really. And getting back to happy employees help your, that create happy customers. So my objective was to figure that out. And I think it did it. We again, being a values-based brand, you have to care about your team members. As any company, you have to care about your team members. And like I said, I think people always talk about, the guest or the customer being right or the guest or customer being first. And I truly believe yes, you have to take care of the guest. And a lot of the decisions that you make have to be about the guest. And is it good for them? But is it good for our team members?
So you've obviously become wildly successful. So what do you think is the key to successfully scaling?
People. It's people. And I say that in one word, right? But it's, I think having a very focused plan is something I've learned. As an entrepreneur, we tend to be all over the place. We have great ideas, 20 of them a day, right? But we need an awesome right-hand man or woman to help us execute. And so we've adopted a process somewhat recently that has allowed us to do that. And so you have to have an implementer. There's always the visionary, and that's us, the entrepreneurs.
Right.
And you've got to have somebody that's going to help you actually get the job done and tell you no. I need someone to tell me no. So I think, you know, the people that you surround yourself with, obviously, number one, and everybody says that, but what does that mean? It means, you know, understanding your strengths and your weaknesses and focusing on the thing that you can do and only the thing that you can do, and getting other people to do the thing that they're best at and letting them do the thing that they're best at.
Awesome. So helpful. Thank you so much for joining us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated. What other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter...
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. This is Business Rockstars. And I have two rock stars today. We've got Jeanne-Ann Grubbs and Abby Lewis Evans, co-founders of Our One Agency. Thanks so much for stopping by,
yeah,
ladies.
Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. So tell me, what is Our One Agency?
So basically, we're a new media marketing agency. So we came from the world of big branding, advertising, doing a little bit of everything, and branched off about a year ago and started something that's really tailored for advertising today and now in 2017. So we do a lot of social media marketing, influencer marketing is a big part of it, content production, strategy, branding, all that good stuff.
And this is the future of marketing. And
yes,
if you are an entrepreneur watching or listening and you're not incorporating this into your business yet, you probably should, right? Tell me a little bit about why this is so important, because it's the future.
Yeah, it's a lot of bigger agencies come from a world of more of the traditional form of advertising. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to just completely switch gears and focus on how quickly everything's changing. And I mean, there used to be, you know, five channels or five avenues that you would advertise on. It's like print, TV, maybe out of home. And then digital started coming in, and then social came in, and then influencer marketing came in, and just everything changed. So basically now there's millions of channels you can advertise on. So everyone is an outlet. So it's really just interesting getting brands to understand how to navigate that space and how to successfully do it, because it changes every day.
And I think it can feel very overwhelming for brands it's like the wild, wild west. But at the same time, there's so much opportunity in the digital space that there wasn't in those other avenues.
Right.
And, you know, for example, you can measure performance and results a lot better online. Can you speak to that a little bit?
And the high frequency of everything going on today allows for, you know, on the fly optimization. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can remain relevant through always turning and pivoting with either your audience or the relevant space that the world is in, you know, it's a better human to human connection that your brand can make with your consumers instead of throwing out a TV ad and then just waiting for everything to trickle in.
It's definitely more real time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it used to be like, we'll do it and we'll optimize and we'll get data learning later. But you can tell immediately now when you post something if it's doing well or not, because yep. people gravitate towards it or they don't. And then if it's not doing well, you can take it down and optimize.
And they have the opportunity to react quickly, either via comments, engagements, you know, good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes less time and money mm-hmm. to see what works. You can test something and put it out there.
Less money is key because yeah. I think a lot of brands, smaller brands, so obviously the mega brands we work for and they have bigger budgets, but there's smaller startup brands too that don't have big budgets that we really, really, really encourage to play in this mm-hmm. space.
It's because the playing field for them too.
Yeah, they can get so much for their money. So the ROI for, you could take a small brand and spend just a few thousand dollars on influencer marketing, but you're able to pick the most influential person, the most authentic person that is needed for that brand. And they're going to go so much further with that $2,000 than trying to play anywhere else where they're just blasting it out.
Yeah. And both of you have a marketing background. Can you each individually tell me a little bit about your history in this space?
Sure. It's been a shared journey, I'd say, of just a big agency experience, both from the account service side of things, which is the liaison between creative, you know, in internal departments and your clients. So as that role, you know, having grown up in the ad world that we both did over the past, you know, decade plus to age ourselves, you know, we learned a little bit about everything and seeing how it plays out from a strategy point of view in clients' reactions, their business needs, mm-hmm. and learning how to curate a way to solve that business need, only knowing what the problem is. So being a solutions-oriented department.
Yeah, we actually both worked at the same ad agency back in Dallas. That was a digital interactive shop at the time in 2006 or something. And it was it was like banner ads, right? So it was like the invention of like digital marketing. So that was kind of where I fell in love with like the digital side. And then it's just so funny now, fast forward 10, 11 years where it is now. But yeah, and then came out to LA, been at big agencies out here working on the big brands, like Abby was saying, on account strategy side and digital and social media. So we basically had that under our belts and knew that we saw an opportunity where the industry was moving to really try to start something that tailored specifically to where the industry was moving and get away from some of those more traditional agencies.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine in your industry and in a lot of industries, there's this constant push and pull between traditional avenues, but then keeping up and evolving as well. So you obviously are evolving into the digital space and you saw a trend and you acted on it. Mm-hmm. So what made you go, you know what, this is where it's going and then I want to be a part of it?
For me, it was a couple years ago, I worked on a big Super Bowl campaign at the agency I was at. And influencer marketing was a big part of that campaign. And I realized with Super Bowl, people were spending so much money on to be, you know, their 60-second, 30-second spot in that. And then there's like kind of this whole other side that became equally in years to come more important than the actual 30-second, 60-second TV spot. And I was playing in that space and just seeing that it was, like you said, the Wild West. And there were so many opportunities to win the Super Bowl in that space. So I think in my background, of course, was always in social. And I just saw, I was like, it's only going to continue to be that path. And I really want to just like capitalize on it now and see what happens.
Totally.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, mine comes from just, I want to do something different every day, all the time, and have it always be so fresh. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of where I was thriving in my, you know, joy and passion in what I was doing leading up to that and the opportunity to do it all the time. just sounded like, you know, heaven. So,
and work for ourselves.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Sure. You guys have been in business for what, a year?
1 year, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So about a year ago, is that when you...
Yeah, hit our heads and decided this was a good idea.
did you immediately quit your full-time jobs or did you kind of make the transition slowly?
Cold turkey.
Okay.
Band-aid right off.
Okay. So tell me about that. Let's go back to when you made the decision. How did you...
Hour one.
Yes. When you made the decision, what were some of those first steps you took? Maybe both mentally and literally.
Right. It was terrifying.
It was.
I mean, we had an opportunity to jump on, and, you know, it required us stepping out on our own, which was terrifying and exciting all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, sometimes you just need those things to help you feel like there's a sign and that you should take advantage of it.
So what was the sign? What was the opportunity?
There was just a big project for us to work on that we could throw our hat in the ring as an agency of our own.
So, yeah. And there was all these little moments along the way that were just like, every time I would go to bed at night and be like, this is crazy. I need to keep my job. It's super secure. My job's amazing. I love the team. I love what I do. And same with Abby. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I would wake up the next morning and something happened that would push us in that direction to do it. So it was just all these little mini signs of, you know, just things coming together or people coming on board to help us and say, I want to help you pitch this. And because I believe in this too. So every time like someone came on board and said, I'm in too, let's do this. It was just like
just confirmation.
Yeah. That it was, the right thing it was all these the right little time. Things that just, and everyone I talked to in my network, every time I was like, this is crazy. People were like, you have to do this. It was just, we had so much support and so many people, you know, it's like pushing us over to that, knowing that we could, if we just didn't question it too much. And we didn't actually get that first project, which is funny because that it now looking back was a blessing in disguise. We were able to pivot and go for a lot of other types of work that we wouldn't have been able to. And so, you know, it's like, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And perseverance is the name of the game.
Right? Perseverance.
So when that first project fell through, then what did you guys do?
You know, we just dusted ourselves off and thought, well, what are our dream accounts? What would we always say we wanted to work on, whether we got to or, you know, didn't get to in our former life now at the big agencies? Because we're past that now. And so what's our dream? What do we want to work on? Let's do it. Let's go after it. And we have and did and we'll continue to.
Still doing? Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird feeling because, you know, I think in my mind, it was like this or nothing. And so then when it didn't work, we didn't have a backup. We weren't like, well, now. So it was that hustle mentality of like sink or swim. It's like, we've already created the name, the brand. We know what we stand for. We know what we want. We are to a point where, you know, we have a lot of great connections and network of people. So let's get out there and hustle. And that's just, I mean, it was literally sink or swim. We had gotten to that point where the Band-Aid had been ripped off. So if we had kept our jobs and pitched that and didn't win it, the security blanket would have been our jobs and we would have just stayed. So it's good
we
that...
We missed out on everything that's happened in the last year, which has been a mix of, you know, terrifying and insecure with immense highs and pride.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Great story, ladies. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about their journey of making it in that first year and also influencer marketing because they are experts in this area. So much more with the co-founders of One Hour Agency. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Remember, it's all about the customer. I'm Alex Worley with the Business Rockstars Minute. The customer is always right. You've heard that before. It's the backbone of customer service. But let's go beyond that. The customer is the backbone of your business. Happy customers buy more products, endorse your service, and most importantly, bring more customers by word of mouth recommendations. So how do you keep your customer happy and satisfied, returning over and over and giving you that personal endorsement? It's simple. Understand their needs, know them personally, and connect with them. Understanding their needs, put yourself in your customer's position to better understand your product, your service, and how to improve it. Know them personally, connect with them, talk to them, not at them, listen to them, and create real relationships. Know their birthdays even, and on that special day, send them a message. Remember, it's all about the customer, and they deserve the very best you have to offer. I'm Alex Worley, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
Sponsored by Palm Beach Research. Text and data rates may apply.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is a household name in the USA. You've seen her on Fox News and across the internet for years. Judge Pirro speaks her mind, and she doesn't mince words when it comes to hypocrisy from the deep state D.C. swamp. And now Judge Pirro is exposing the insiders and politicians who have been setting themselves up to make fortunes in the cannabis sector. In a surprising turn, dozens of D.C. insiders who have attacked marijuana for years are plowing millions into backdoor cannabis investments. Judge Pirro's exclusive expose on this cannabis conspiracy is yours free when you text JUDGE to 76280 now. We'll send you a link to a video presentation that shows you how you can take advantage of the same opportunities to profit that these DC insiders have been keeping to themselves. They have changed their thinking from lock 'em up to light 'em up. You can find out which companies are set for explosive growth. Text JUDGE to 76280. Get Judge Pirro's expose on the cannabis conspiracy. Text JUDGE to 76280. Now.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
Electric scooters have exploded in popularity around the country, and at least 10 national companies have emerged, renting the scooters by the hour in many cities. They're called micromobility companies, and they're growing quickly. But in Connecticut, any industry growing that quickly and making profits that impressive offers an opportunity for regulation. Sure enough, the legislature passed a new law this year, subjecting riders and owners to a slew of new state regulations. They also made sure to allow local governments to add even more regulations. Riding a bike or a scooter requires common sense, the most uncommon thing in our culture, but it does not require government regulation. It just isn't that complicated.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
The biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to Business Rockstars. We've got two rock stars for you today. We've got Jeanine Grubbs and Abby Lewis Evans, co-founders of Hour One Agency. So we were talking about how you guys are experts in influencer marketing.
Yes.
So for those who this is brand new to them, explain what is influencer marketing, first of all.
Well, it basically came up, about 5 years ago, early beginnings, but over the last 2 years, it's just everywhere and all over the place. But it's taking influential people within their own perspective or own respective rights and avenues and areas and partnering with brands to kind of get a product out there and talk about a product of it that fits organically with what that influencer does. So it could be anything from fashions. I think one of the biggest categories.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of fashion
makeup
influencers, but... but also it can be, education or science or
tech
or, someone that has like a hobby or interest that they share. It can be collecting things or certain films or anything like that. And they become an advocate and a person that has credibility in what they're talking about.
Yeah, and they have a niche audience, which is a unique opportunity that didn't exist before, where you can connect with a very, very specific audience. Of course, the people that you want to be connecting with through the avenue of, like you said, somebody credible.
Yes.
So how do you determine whether or not somebody is an influencer or not?
Well, that depends on a few factors, and it's always a little bit different and takes a little bit of a different eye into it depending on what the brand wants out of it or if it's a specific if it's a specific reason for looking for this influencer. So you can find an influencer based on solely numbers. Maybe if you're looking for awareness within a certain audience, you can find an influencer more based on high engagement. If you are looking to maybe push a product or promote sales of something, just knowing that they have an audience that is actually not only watching what they do, but doing what they do.
Mm-hmm. What can a business realistically expect from doing influencer marketing? Is it more for awareness, or is it more for sales, or something else?
And awareness is great, but you can also get awareness on like a much broader level. I mean, TV or something, a traditional forum. For this space, because you know you're not like buying impressions necessarily. What you're trying to do is make a really natural pairing. So if you're selling a beverage of some sort, find someone that, you know, in what they create and what they post that is works really naturally in. Or if it's a tool and you're working with someone that is building things every single day, like the tool brand should be working with that person because they're already using your products. And so for awareness, that's great because you can get that. But I think seeing the product in action and seeing the product and used how an average person would be using it is where brands are really going
to
win.
So you really have to strategically pick the influencer that you're going to work with, which I'm sure you help these brands
do. The identification process is the most important thing. So what we do is we look at the objectives of the brand and we look at the product they're trying to get in the hands of consumers and what they're trying to achieve. So their demographics, all of that, obviously part of the process of picking the right person. And then we find the most influential people that hit on those demographics and hit on, you know, something that doesn't feel like a departure for the brand, you know? So it's, again, something very seamless. You work it in.
Or the influencer.
Yeah. And fashion, I think, is a big part. You know, find someone that is just always giving style tips and things like that and work in your product in that sort of way. You know, I think the forced ones can backfire. So if you're throwing something towards an audience that sees you just kind of, it's like sponsored posts, it just feels like you're not really winning.
It's authentic, and that's really all you're going for with using influencer marketing is an authenticity, a true fan of the brand using it that just so happens to have a ton of fans of themselves.
And we also try to find people that are advocates for the brand, so that the brand may not even know about. So we find someone that flies a certain airline all the time and vlogs every time they're getting on that airline and so excited to be on that airline. Mm-hmm. And we're like, this airline needs to be working with this person, as opposed to finding someone that actually never flies their airline or something like that.
And then it's just fake.
And then it's fake and their audience doesn't care and it doesn't work.
So how do you naturally create content to bridge that gap between the brand and the influencer?
We work with them because they're the best. They know their audience the best. So they are experts at knowing what works on their channel. So you have to listen to them and have to create how they want to create. The brand doesn't really get that. They can give do's and don'ts and some guidelines, but they can't really say, can you post this for me? And if you do that, you're basically just buying impressions. If the brand creates something, the influencer just posted, it's not a true, it's not how it works best.
That's so true, because for some influencers, a still photo does great. Mm-hmm. Maybe a selfie does great. Mm-hmm. For some influencers, a video does better. Like every influencer has a very different audience.
We're speaking about a certain aspect of said product or brand, you know, in their own right, and just giving them that creative liberty is going to go so much further and in a natural way that the audience doesn't feel like they're being sold to, because I think that's the opposite of what they want, you know?
Right. Yeah. And you guys work a ton with social media, obviously, both with influencers and without. Is there something that you've learned when it comes to specifically marketing that does well versus doesn't do well?
It's so funny. There's like, if everyone thinks they have the secret sauce, right, to what shares or what goes viral or what works. And there are ways to know what, you know, there's analytics, there's data, there's things we can know for sure. It's like, we should be putting some money here and there and with this place. But it's really, it's a test and learn space for sure. It's optimizing constantly and not getting disappointed when something doesn't perform well, because that's valuable information that we need to know.
nothing's a failure if you learn from it, right?
Yeah, I love it. And on that note, thank you so much. Congratulations on all of your successes and your first year of business.
I know.
For sharing the lessons learned. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Co-founders of Our One Agency, and we are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
Lawrence Wehner is joining us right now. He's the CEO of BDIC. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
So BDIC, what do you guys do?
We are a criminal offender monitoring company. We do breath, alcohol, ignition, interlock devices for DUI offenders with a future outlook on ankle monitoring for different types of criminal offender monitoring, whether it's, home-based, work-based, whatever the case may be.
Well, we've had a lot of people come through the doors. We've never had somebody come in who's got that kind of a business.
Right.
How'd you get into this space?
Well, it's, kind of a long story. I had a friend of mine who was a DUI attorney who mentioned to me the opportunity and the new laws that were passing. I had a very large tax resolution business that, the government had changed some rules. We had to change some things. I was looking for a new business to get into. So I took the money I made there and got into this criminal offender monitoring space as these laws have gotten tougher and tougher over the last few years.
So the business, how do you actually monetize it? What do you guys do?
We lease the devices to the offender.
The breathalyzer devices?
The breathalyzer, right, which is installed in their vehicle and monitors their breath alcohol level. If they blow positive over a 0.02, because it's basically zero tolerance, they've already been convicted of an offense, then their vehicle will not start and they can't drive their vehicle. Also, a lot of states have gone to compliance-based removal. So if they get, enough of those or any of those in the last several months of their sanction, they'll have to keep it even longer. So we lease that to them on a monthly basis. Once they're done with the program and the state allows them to remove that from the vehicle, they return that to us and we just put it in somebody else's vehicle and we collect monthly fees, monthly revenue on a reoccurring basis. So the more units we have out there, we get that money in every month, month in, month out, regardless, and not have to do much customer service. It's already in there and it's doing its job. Cool. It's kind of like having a vending machine out there.
Well, I've got some questions about, what if it reads wrong and how that would affect somebody. But before we do that, you were kind of, you're a humble guy. You're like, I don't want to talk too much about myself and what I've done.
I am a humble guy.
But I was like, you got the failures. So that's what people relate to. So what's been like maybe one or two of your biggest failures you've made in business? And on the other end of it, you came out with like some lessons. Because at the end of the day, that's what we do, right? We fail, we learn, we fail, we learn.
Yes, absolutely.
We can get to a place of success eventually.
Absolutely. And I am a lifelong entrepreneur, and when you are a lifelong entrepreneur, there's ups and there's downs. And
always.
You got to zig and you got to zag. Otherwise, you just get punched in the face. And as Mike Tyson said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. So, like I said, I had a very large tax resolution business. We were making a ton of money. I had close to 70 employees. And one day I woke up, the government changed the rules. And they said, that's the rules. We're changing the rules. You can no longer operate under those conditions. And you're basically stuck out of business so.
It's crazy how that can just happen.
It can just happen. The government, technology, just different things can put you out of business. You don't even see them coming.
So you always got to be ready to pivot and change.
Yeah. I mean, many years ago, right after I came out of San Diego State, I started a business opportunities business where I was, advertising in newspapers, classified sections all over the country. This was way before the internet. I'd have these classified that were, they were that thick at that day, you can't find them anymore. And I'd get calls all day long. And then as the internet came around, I started noticing that, instead of having 20 guys of my competitors every Sunday morning in that section, it was just me and one other guy and I wasn't getting any calls. I used to get a ton of calls. It took me years to realize that business opportunity marketing had moved to Craigslist and other types of things like that. You know, it was like 3 years later, I'm like, oh, should have just stayed in it. You know what I mean? But so sometimes you don't even see them coming. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to face those challenges and, you know, keep going one day at a time, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah. What was the key to building your company to 70 employees? That's a really impressive number. You obviously were, you know, growing.
Sales.
But it's growing the team with sales, not just being the guy that does it yourself.
Correct. But being the guy who can do it yourself gives you the ability to teach others how to do it. You know your business. You don't have to rely on anybody else. The guy doesn't show up. You say, no problem. I'll do it myself. And it's sales. If anybody tells you anything different, they're wrong. It's all about in business. You've got to get out there. You got to pound the pavement, pound the phone, pound the doors, do whatever it takes. You got to get the sales.
That's the one thing every successful person I've talked to always agrees with is it's all about the sales.
All about
CEO sales. Of BDIC, Lawrence Wainer, is joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. What do you feel like is the hardest thing about breaking away from like the 9-to-5 job into the entrepreneur space?
Well, you know, I know everybody talks about risk and you know, walking away from that weekly paycheck, that weekly budget that you know how much you're going to get paid and how much your car payment is and your rent payment at the end of the week. You know, you got enough and you got it covered. I know that's, you know, obviously the one part of it. And you got to make sure you've got funds. So
Cash flow management.
You got to do the sales. Again, if you can do the sales,
you
can generate the cash to keep going. Yeah. If you can do the sales, you don't have to rely on loans and different types of stuff. I mean, it really depends on the type of business, but you know, you've got to assume the risk, and there's lots of risk. Obviously, you can go broke. You can credit scores take a hit. Things like that happen when you're an entrepreneur because life just happens. And it's just a risky business, but the rewards can be great. And beyond the money that one can make as being an entrepreneur, you always have this, you know, warm, fuzzy feeling that you've employed people. You know what I mean? I always say the one thing they can put on my gravestone is I hired some people in my day. You know, I created jobs, I paid people. And I think that, you know, that's a benefit to everybody if you can create jobs and help people work and
I love that.
Keep the economy going like that.
So outside from that, you kept saying sales.
Correct.
So if somebody's not good at sales, which I hear is the excuse all the time, I'm sure you've heard it as well.
Correct.
They go, well, if I got to start my business, I got to bring sales in, but I'm not good at it or I don't like feeling salesy. How does somebody overcome that? If you're the only one responsible for sales, it's just you.
Practice.
Okay. Don't use it as an excuse.
Just practice. Plenty of books out there. Plenty of people that can help you. You know, there's plenty of, I mean, even today I watch shows like The Prophet, Billion Dollar Buyer.
We had him in here, sitting right where you were sitting.
Really fantastic. Let me not. but you know, those guys, if you just watch those shows, you'll get lessons from that you can take that will help you. There's millions of
Shark
books
Tank,
out there.
YouTube.
Shark Tank, YouTube.
You grew up when there wasn't that technology and you still made it happen. But nowadays, we're inundated with the information.
No excuse. You just got to get the self-confidence. Just pull up your bootstraps and do it. If you're going to make excuses for that, you really don't belong as an entrepreneur, in my opinion.
I think one of the keys, and I agree with you, is if you can, and there's really no excuse for this either. If you can find mentors, sometimes the best mentors are in books and online and you can just watch their videos.
Correct.
And again, read their books and find their information for free.
For free.
Did you ever have great mentors growing up?
You know, I want to say that my old man, obviously, was a businessman his whole life and, you know, grew up with him and he always talked business. And
a little bit rubbed off on you?
A little bit rubbed off on me there. So I would say a lot of it's genetic for me and that I kind of grew up in an entrepreneurial household. So I have that advantage maybe. Yeah.
But some people do and they end up failing when some people would make the excuse of like, well, I didn't. So that's why this guy was successful and why I can't be. I feel like people always try to find the excuse, but for you with mentors though, did you get like one big lesson that has followed you throughout life that you keep going back to?
You know, like you said, we didn't have quite the resources that we had that you have today. Back in, you know, when I was coming up, it was basically you go to the bookstore And really, there was Tom Hopkins, The Art of Selling Anything. And I think there was How to Make Friends and Influence People by
Dale Carnegie.
That's about all there was. And I read those books and, you know,
those are classics today. Still.
They are still classics today. Yeah. And I read those books and, you know, there are some valuable lessons in there, but there's no valuable lesson like experience. You just have to put on the jacket. Put on the blue uniform, whatever it takes, and get out there and do it. There's nothing going to prepare you for it but just doing it. Mm. It really isn't that hard. All it is talking to people and, you know, trying to, you know, listen, obviously there are people that just don't have the personality for that. You know, I would say that if you dig deep enough, it's in there for everybody who really wants it. If you really want it, you'll find that spirit. You'll find that inspiration to pick up the phone, call your target customer and spit it out and ask for the sale and see what happens. All they can do is say no.
Yeah. I love what you're saying.
All they can do is say no.
At the end of the day, you got to put in the reps, you got to put in the practice, and nothing trumps experience.
Nothing trumps experience and just doing it. Pick up the phone. Like I said, ask for the sale and all they can do is say no.
That's right. All they can do is say no. We'll be right back with Lawrence Wehner to find out more of his keys to success. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do. So you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that advanced your career skills and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? Find out more. Text LEAD to 79645. Start on the path to earning your MBA or Business Analytics Master's degree online from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the graduate programs from the top-ranked W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University offered 100% online. Text LEAD to 79645. That's LEAD to 79645. You should.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Lawrence Wehner is joining us right now. He's the CEO of BDIC. Recap for us what your business does.
Well, like I said, we're in the criminal offender monitoring space, mainly focused right now on alcohol ignition interlock devices, which are laws in all 50 states. We're trying to get approved in all 50 states. We're currently approved in 11, functionally operating in approximately 7 of them. Because we have incredible demand for the product, and we've just received some funding to manufacture a couple thousand units, and we'll put those out on the road here pretty soon and get those monetized and into our reoccurring revenue stream.
That's fantastic. We were just talking about how, you know, when is the right time to raise money? A lot of people are trying to raise money, and it may or may not be right for their business. How did you know that it was the right move to raise close to $1 million for your business?
Well, it was based on sales demand. I knew that I had a demand for the product. I knew that I needed money to manufacture my product. My product, we manufacture overseas, pretty expensive. There's, you know, pretty intensive technology within this thing because there's live reporting, there's GPS, there's, you know, there's the inside the device is a lot of software as well as hardware.
You got to make sure nobody's getting screwed over.
Yeah, no one's getting screwed over, and that, you know, the states are properly being reported to, and that nobody can tamper with the equipment.
A lot of stuff in there.
So I had a particular hurdle to cross where I had this huge demand for my product. And I don't mean like individual demand from individual offenders. The way we're growing our business and something we, you know, would like to talk about is how we're focused on growing our business is to find in this business a state-of-the-art breath alcohol ignition interlock device is not so much a concern of the consumer. Although, you know, consumers always drive sales. It's more of a function of the people that are in the industry, the judges, the probation officers, the parole officers, the Department of Motor Vehicles, whoever you're doing the reporting to, as well as the people who deal with these devices on a daily basis. These distributors who have been distributors of some of our major competitors for many years, but are working with very old and ancient equipment. Our plan is to go in there and flip those distributors over to our device. This way we put 600 units or 1,600 units out in the market overnight, as opposed to one criminal offender at a time. Would take, you know, years and years and years to do. Although, you know, we do have, you know, different prongs. We do have our own retail that we do our own one by one by one.
So let's break it down. So you do one-on-one sales.
One-on-one sales.
But you're trying to get yourself integrated into the distribution channels of other people. How's that process look?
The process works like this. We get approved by the state of Maryland, let's say, for example.
Okay.
Just passed some very strict laws in this industry for people who are going to get these convictions. So the laws have become very, very tough. Now, there are people out there that already have 1,000 customers who use these devices and already have built those business relationships in Maryland or Pennsylvania, or wherever the case might be. They've built those relationships with the parole officers and the judges and the bail bondsmen and the different way that these customers flow into our business. It really depends on the state and how it works, where the choke point is. Could be the parole officer, could be the driving school, could be the judge himself.
So business people usually refer to that as like the gatekeeper?
The gatekeeper, correct. Yes, that's what exact. Good word. Good word. The gatekeeper for our business is different in every state. But once you identify that person, they've already have those relationships. They've built those relationships for, you know, 5-10 years already. They already have a constant flow of new offenders coming through their doors. So all we do is basically go to them and change from where they've been getting their, from the manufacturer they've been using. Now, I don't want to use anybody's names. I'm supposed to say, our competitors, our competitors' devices, because we're, you know, and they basically are switching contracts over.
So
to
what's
us.
The benefit to them though? Because that's really the key here, right? Is it's like, unless you're like their brother-in-law and like you feel like from a family, like I got to keep this contract here. There's got to be a reason for them to switch over. Is it
absolutely
that they're going to get a little bit more money because they use yours?
No.
Why are they going to make the switch?
Money's not the big deal here. Money, more or less, for them will be the same.
So what's the switch?
The switch is the technology. Many states are going to require, many states today require live reporting, GPS, camera technology that many of our competitors don't have.
So it's simply, we're going to have a better quality product we stand by and represent ourselves with. And
well,
it's yours.
Not so much that. The legislature has passed rules that my competitors' devices don't even meet. Okay, so they're going to lose their certification in those states.
Yeah, okay.
So those distributors that have built a business over 10 years with that device are going to be out of business unless they switch devices or the manufacturer that they're already using goes and produces a more modern device. Most of our competitors are using devices that were manufactured before Bluetooth was even a word in the English language. Our device is so much more modern, so much more, it's wireless, it has GPS technology, it has camera technology. Again, these are not things the consumer cares about. It's what the state of Oklahoma cares about. If they're going to allow you to get this vendor contract in their state to install these devices on their offenders, they want live reporting. So when the guy blows a violation, it's reported directly at that in real time. Yeah. And a parole officer, a highway patrolman or a cop can pull up and see what's going on.
This reminds me of what you said earlier, which is that you've got to have your ear on the railroad and be aware of the changes happening. We've got the CEO of BDIC, Lawrence Wehner, joining us. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Mark Lack, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Innovation, that's kind of the key here. I feel like that's what's giving you a competitive edge.
Correct. We have just a better machine that's reaching the modern requirements that the states are changing their laws to. 5 years ago, no state required a camera on the device to determine that the person blowing is the actually the person who has the
conviction. Yeah, I can just
conviction.
Be like, yo.
Right, he's not just giving his dude, kid and saying, blow on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so.
I'll give you a candy bar.
So states are going to camera technology. Some of our competitors, their device doesn't have the ability to do that. It just doesn't have the hardware to do that. The live reporting is a function of being able to,
I mean, it just makes it, it's the inevitable. You have to have live reporting. You have to have video. You have to have all these things.
Right. Well, 5 years ago, live reporting didn't exist. So all they did was download the data and send it into the state via email or by mail or whatever the case might be. But today, states don't want that. They want a device that's going to give them real data in real time about what's happening with their criminals that they're allowing, you know, out of prison and back on the roads or whatever. They want to know in real time what's going on.
That's the trend, though, is in any business, we want real-time data. If it's me spending marketing dollars, if it's, in this case, you know, for blowing, for criminals, it doesn't matter what it is. People want real-time data.
And my competitors do not have that software.
It reminds me of, like, a Blockbuster Netflix. Like, Blockbuster felt like they had dominated and established the contracts with the customers, essentially.
And then Netflix comes in. They didn't even see it coming. And they
or Kodak
see it.
With film versus digital.
Correct. They don't even see it coming.
Why is that, though? I mean, even in your industry,
why like, you don't see it coming?
It goes across all industries. People like establish themselves.
You know, when you're making money, you get into a kind of a comfort zone where you just don't want to hear anything different. You know what I mean?
I think
you
it's the six like, most deadly words. We've always done it this way. Get out of here.
We've always done it this way, right? 30 years ago, someone told me to hammer this nail and I've been doing it for 30 years and I'm not doing it.
This is how I built it.
This is how I built it.
You're a rock star, Lawrence. I appreciate you for coming on the show, brother.
Thanks very much for having me, man.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it, bud.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do. So you can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This is your Tech It Out Minute with Mark Saltzman, brought to you by Asus.
From computers to smartphones to the auto industry, and yes, even your kitchen, the effects of high tech are everywhere. And that's the case with the new tech-infused LG InstaView fridge with Kraft Ice. What's InstaView? We asked David Oyegi from LG.
Most of your home parties either start or end in the kitchen. And with the InstaView, basically you knock twice on the door, it lights up a glass panel and allows you to see into the fridge.
And what is Kraft Ice?
With our Kraft Ice maker, it makes 3 2-inch spheres at a time, takes about a day to make them, and then when they're ready, dumps it into the ice tray. And that ice tray will hold about 25 spheres. If you're having a party and you fill up your 25 spheres, just put them in another container and keep going.
Find out more on LG's InstaView fridge with Kraft Ice at LG.com.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, and joining me today is Irini Schlosser, the CEO and founder of the Chooze app. Give us the quick elevator pitch. What's the Chooze app?
Sure. So Chooze essentially combines the functionality and filter of a Yelp-type app with the curation and specific user information that you have from something like a Pandora for food and drink.
I love it. So I'm going out at night and this thing will basically be a combination of Yelp and Pandora to help me figure out my favorite places.
Exactly. So it's all curated internally. We have food bloggers, chefs, wine sommeliers, food critics who provide the content. And that's the initial spot portfolio. And the spots start to adapt to you as a user over time.
I love that. What has been the hardest part so far about getting this thing off of the ground?
So the most difficult part, I think, was the gap between, generally you need funding to get users, just to get the word out there, marketing, user acquisition, and you usually need users to get funding. So that chicken and the egg problem is something that I know a lot of entrepreneurs face, but I think the biggest challenge was trying to arrange how to have revenues early on so we could break that that cycle.
So how are you guys able to get funded without having that?
So we were in the fortunate position where we were able to bootstrap and self-fund for quite a long time. Both myself and my co-founder, came from investment banking backgrounds and just took our savings and plopped it into Chooze. So it was definitely a high risk, but we really believed in what we were doing. We loved the app. And when we were seeing that users were loving it as well, that's what made us really keep moving forward and working on as much as we can.
How many iterations of the app have you guys had to create so far?
Oh, many.
Give us a number.
So I would probably say originally, let's say by May, we were at 10 iterations. And this is just, you know, updates with debugging, new features, new design, user interface. And then now we've just been going through fast growth periods where we just keep tweaking and updating every week. So we're probably at around 30 right now.
How different is the actual end product that you guys are using now versus mm-hmm. when you first started?
Very different. So we actually went through a pivot in February. So we realized that what users really, really loved was the spot discovery. And that was just the specific user need question of where do I go? It's 7 p.m. I'm on a street corner. I want tacos. What's actually good? And so we developed the app specifically to tailor that the answer to that question. Whereas before, we were kind of trying to do two things at once. We were doing both spot discovery and allowing people to connect with their friends and plan the outing, which we realized that the actual trouble of people trying to plan with their friends was not the fact that, you know, they needed to send a bunch of messages. It was the fact that they just didn't know where to go. So the problem was really just one question. And that was the pivot that we moved into. So I think that allowed us to really refine the app, add all of the information that we needed. We developed a filter where you can filter by what spots are your friends' favorites. So if you trust a specific foodie friend, you can view all of their favorites on the app. You no longer have to call them up and say, where should I go for wine or where should I go for tacos?
So my question for you is, the hardest thing when having an app is getting users to download it mm-hmm. and then getting those users to consistently use the app.
Yep.
So how are you guys overcoming that?
So actually for us, just because, and the elevator pitch, I guess, doesn't even do it as much justice because the design itself is just users love it. It's very easy to use. It's similar to Spotify's original mood menu setup. So they immediately get it. We don't even have to do a lot of user education. So our engagement rates are very, very high. However, getting the word out there is the biggest challenge, I think, for us by far. And we were fortunate that we've had about 900% organic growth of just people spreading the word. We got some good press coverage. So people were just hearing about it. So those are the more organic ways. And then we're doing a lot to just get users in the most free way possible. So I think, yeah, we're getting pretty scrappy in terms of how to go around, just get users. We're even having, you know, part of our team do shifts and actually deliver food from some of the delivery apps and drop wow. in Chooze download cards into each bag. And that works wonders because people open up
marketing.
The bag. Yeah, it's really guerrilla marketing. So
you said you started this with some of your friends, right?
So I was the original founder. I was in London at the time when I thought of the idea. And
how did it come to you, by the way? Was it in the shower? Was it
no,
sipping
it was
coffee?
Post appendicitis surgery. So wow. I don't know.
So all the medication helped you come
up
with
the medication, I guess it worked quite well.
So you owe your future success to the appendicitis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, it was kind of funny because my hospital room, I was in London and it was just full of like 30 girls. The nurses didn't even know what was going on. They're like, is it a party in here? And everyone was like, where should we go after you get out? Trying to text me like, let's go meet for coffee. So the idea kind of came up as a problem too. I don't have time to text everyone. Let's just find a spot. Boom. So that was the original idea. And then I was working on it for probably around 6 months part-time. So part-time meaning, you know, 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. after work. And you can't really do anything creative when you're that exhausted. So it was just kind of doing the research in the business, in the industry, figuring out what I actually needed to do. And I left Morgan Stanley and joined full time last summer. So my co-founder got on board around that time. My co-founder is also originally from Cleveland. So we're both, you know, we did the investment banking first in Cleveland together. So we were colleagues and then stayed in touch over the years. And
have you guys had any big failures so far, or you personally, has there been a big failure or obstacle you had to overcome?
I think the biggest thing that we learned was how not to acquire users. So what we learned is that users will be much, much more receptive to the app when they're hearing about it in a context that addresses their pain point. So for example, in a dating app, people are finding who to meet. The next question is, where do we go? In a real estate app, for example, they're trying to get comfortable with the neighborhood that they want to move to. What spots are in the area? So that's actually relevant to the pain point of the user. Whereas when we try to promote the app with events, firstly, they're usually quite expensive. And secondly, we learned that, you know, most people don't really care who's throwing the event. They actually just care about the content being played during the event or the music or the DJ. So that was the kind of the hardest lesson that we had to learn, was that we're not doing any more events and we're not spending money on things that don't have a specific direct return. So
I love that. So you got to be really clear about where you guys choose to invest your
exactly.
money.
Exactly. Every dollar for us just has to give something back. Partnerships, something.
So. Okay. Let's talk about competition in just a second. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any? I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Joining me is the CEO and founder of the Choose app, Irini Schlosser. Again, you guys, you know, the best way I can explain your app is basically a combination of Pandora and Yelp. That basically, mm-hmm. as I use it consistently, it starts to learn about the favorite places that I can choose to go out with my friends for food and drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a natural question was competition. Do you guys have any? First question. Mm-hmm. And if you do, who is it and how are you guys standing out from them?
Sure. So, you know, the biggest competition obviously is your Yelps or Foursquares. Okay. But they've been around for years and they've done the very mass review, heavy focused business model. Foursquare was a little bit more on the coupon side of things. Then they kind of spun out Swarm, which was checking in. So that's one side is the mass review. So that's consistent with like your TripAdvisor, Lonely Planet.
So they're definitely competitors.
They answer the same question of where do I go?
Okay.
Now, what we found is that when we did all of our user surveys, probably 95% of the time we'll ask user, how do you find the place to go for food and drink? And they'll say Yelp. And we say, do you like the content? And generally, probably around 80 to 90% of the time, they say no, that they don't trust authenticity or the reviews or that there's too many reviews. It's not as refined. And then we say, well, what do you like about Yelp? And they really liked the filter. So to be able to say open now or what's in this neighborhood. So that's actually what we added as well, because it just users liked it. It was easy for them to use.
Copy what works.
Yeah, copy what works and, you know, leave out what doesn't work. So what didn't work was the content. And so on that side, we started curating with food bloggers, chefs, et cetera, of which spots were the best spots to add on the app based on which mood. So, for example, in New York City, we had, they have 20,000 restaurants. We have right now 800 to 1,000 spots. And so those spots, generally, wherever you're standing in New York, you'll be able to find something good within 10 minutes, at least 10 spots around you within 10 to 15 minutes of walking.
Well, let's talk about team building for a second to shift gears on you.
Yep.
But how hard has it been to build the team for what you guys have been doing? Any business is not easy, but especially with the technology.
Actually, that was probably the easiest. So
why do you think that was?
So I had everyone on my team I know for over 6 or 7 years, and we've worked together in different capacities. So
is that pros or cons?
No, it's great because we're already tested. We've, you know, been through probably the worst.
You know how to work together.
Yeah, we know how to work together. We know everyone's work styles. And you definitely need that when you're in a startup where it's a little bit less of a structured environment. So you really need to know your teammates well, in terms of even things that, whether something's bothering them or they're fine, who needs a break, someone needs to just go take a vacation, whatever the situation is, you need to know, how everyone is.
What type of culture do you guys try to create in your business?
I think the cultural focus is that it's really as open as possible. I think the biggest priority that I've had is just trying to make sure that everyone is always communicating. Because if you're communicating, you can solve any problem before any assumptions are made. And I think that's actually what saved us, is that if there's, you know, any questions, I'm always asking, well, just tell me what you want. How can I help you?
Yeah.
So I think that's really the culture that we're trying to focus on.
So having started your first business, the Choose app, what do you think are three takeaways that everyone needs to know when starting a business?
I think the first thing is build the business that your customers or users want versus what you think is in your head. And if you find things that are very different than what you have in mind, be very quick to pivot. So I think that's probably what saved us, was that we were just doing internal focus groups.
So how do you ultimately stay grounded and find time to make sure that you are grateful for all of the things that you have accomplished?
For me, it's really just been focusing on carving out some time for myself to do sports or to do activities. So recently, actually this year, since I moved to LA, I've been surfing a lot. And I used to windsurf, so that was kind of an easier transition. But I loved surfing, and it was weird that I loved it because I've always been a basketball player growing up. So I was always used to just very heavy team sports and getting down in the, you know, practicing with my team and et cetera, et cetera. And so surfing just kind of fit the phase that I was in with entrepreneurship because you get momentum, the wave just beats you down. You have to get back up. The way you get momentum, the wave just beats you down. So I think that was probably it was almost therapeutic in the sense that I could just go relax every weekend.
Well, I love that. I'm excited to see the Choose app blow up, and I really appreciate you for coming on our show. It's been awesome. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Rockstars. Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that advanced your career skills and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? Find out more. Text LEAD to 79645. Start on the path to earning your MBA or Business Analytics Master's degree online from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the graduate programs from the top-ranked W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University offered 100% online. Text LEAD to 79645. That's LEAD to 79645.
While children can benefit from using digital devices, parents need to also help them learn healthy habits. This includes setting clear limits on tech use. And a great tool for parents to set these limits is Our Pact. Parents can download the Our Pact app and sign up for a free account. Then, after pairing their children's devices, they're able to manage them remotely through one-touch blocking or automated schedules. To learn more, visit OurPact.com.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with substance use, don't wait to get help. The Addiction Resource Center is a free alcohol and drug helpline staffed by counselors and available 24/7 at 1-833-301-HELP or visit AddictionResourceCenter.org. A message from Addiction Policy Forum, a nonprofit group started by families who've been where you are. Reach out today. That's 1-8.
This is Business Rockstars. Rockstars.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. Our guest today joining us is a serial entrepreneur, and his name is Jason Sullivan. Jason, it's great to have you, brother.
Mark, it's great to see you again, man. It's been a long time.
So how do we identify those key people to help us grow our business?
Well, Mark, it would all depend on what type of business that you want to be in, right? And what type of vertical that you wish to be in. But the first thing that I ask people, if they want to find the right people that can help them grow their business, right, is first thing is, what do they read? Right? Mm-hmm. What your targets, whenever you're looking for your prospects.
So why is that? Why do you want to know where they read?
Well, the reason is because those publications that are industry specific are going to have thought leaders in that particular space.
So it could be Fast Company, Forbes, things like that?
That's correct. Okay. Business magazines, whatever industry leading magazine that's out there. So think about, what do they read? And then you can also go and find those publications, start reading them, call through them. You're going to see other people that are in near advertising. You're going to see other thought leaders that are writing stories and publishing and whatnot. And then also you're going to see different events that are coming up, which leads me to the next part is, where do they gather, right? So what do they read and where do they gather?
So like what groups are they a part of? What events are they attending? Things like that?
That's correct. Associations, clubs, even you can go to meetup, right? There's a great place to meet other people with like minds and things like that. But the association and the expos especially, those are things that you need to be mingling and shaking hands and kissing babies if you want to meet the right people, right? Okay. There's a lot of other ways that you can find people too. There's some really cool publications that are out there, like the business journals. So every single city or every single metropolitan area will have their own Business Journal, like we have the Los Angeles Business Journal.
Yeah.
They have a special list in there that's a treasure trove for finding the right people that could help you grow your business or be advisors to you potentially. Okay. And it's called the Business Book of List. Okay. The Business Journal's
Book of
List.
And this is free for anybody?
Book of List might cost you 10 bucks to go pick up, okay, or so if you get a subscription, right? You
know, anyone can afford that.
Yeah, but anybody can afford it. Yeah, go and get a subscription to Los Angeles Business Journal if you're here locally, yeah, or whatever city that you're in. Get a subscription, get that Book of List. It'll show you all the top companies leading, starting from number one all the way down to the top 30 or top 50 or top 100, depending on the list,
yeah,
and industry specific. And get in there. And what I did when I wanted to get in front of the right people in one of the companies that I had years ago, I was in the Tampa Bay area. So I went in Tampa Bay Business Journal. I found all the top leading industry CEOs that I wanted to emulate, that I wanted to learn from. And what I did is I wrote letters to those individuals starting from the number one. So always start at the top. Yeah. Right. It's a lot different starting at the top and working your way from the bottom up, right? Because somebody's always there trying to stop you on the way up. Start at the top and work your way down.
So most people would think, hey, I should just try to go work my way up. You take it the opposite approach.
Absolutely.
Start at the top.
Opposite. Start at the very top. Okay. Send your letter to the CEO and the VP of sales or whoever it is out there and copy each of them. So each other knows that they were copied. Okay. So that now your target, who might be the VP of sales, knows that their CEO got the letter and that they could be watching on what's taking place with that letter. And if there is a follow up,
I like that. So you're getting other people involved and it kind of sparks the curiosity. So they want to keep paying attention to where
it's going. It's called the circle of leverage letter. I can't remember where I learned that, but a long time ago. So whoever your target is, send a letter to that individual, right? Send it to their subordinate who might be bucking for their job. Send it to their peer who's jockeying with them for attention. And send it to their boss. Send it to all of them and make sure that all of them got copied in it. So everybody knows that they got it. And then they want to react to it. Because if you're trying to pitch something, they don't know who you are. So why do they have a reason to care? Because they're getting a lot of different letters from a lot of different people. And they have gatekeepers and everything else that may be shuffling those letters and stacking them in a stack that may never ever get read, unfortunately. So,
so you got to be able to stand out.
You got
to
keep leverage. You got to create leverage where you don't have any. So what does everybody care about? They care about the relationships. So if they don't know who you are as a salesperson, they care about the relationships within their company. So if you send that letter to them, their subordinate, their peer, and their CEO, almost guarantee you they're going to respond to you.
And you've done this from a personal experience.
I've done this so many times, you can't even count. And it works.
Serial entrepreneur Jason Solomon's joining us. We're talking about how to get in front of the right people to grow your business. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. Jason, you're saying that anyone can go on Twitter, they can put their ear on the railroad, essentially.
That's right.
And they can dive in.
See, there's an old saying that I learned from a mentor of mine who you know, Max Carey Jr., one of the chief strategists, or was the chief strategist of Outback Steakhouse Corporation that grew up from one store to 2000.
Yeah.
My favorite mentor. But there's one thing that he taught me, and that is there can be no strategy without intelligence, right? Now, repeat that. There can be no strategy without intelligence. So I take it a step further and say that there can be no greater strategy than one that's built around real-time intelligence. So when you say ear to the railroad, that's precisely what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever business that you're in, go there, search, get your intelligence, find out what's being said, especially real time. Okay. And then go through the search bars like that, like search dash advanced on Twitter and find, and you're going to see the latest and greatest news. You're going to call through it. It's going to break down which are the most key influential conversations at this moment. Then you're going to identify them as friend or foe. Is this a competitor? Right. Which you can learn from your competitors, right?
Of course.
Or is this a friend? And then you can qualify that. And the way I qualify them as I'm calling through conversations that are relevant and applicable to my business, I qualify it as a real-time sales lead, put them in a bucket. Right. So I've got all these buckets here. Real-time sales lead, throw that here. And then later on, I can follow up with them. Right. Business development opportunity. Right. This might be somebody I want to do business with. It could be a co-marketing opportunity, which is slightly different than a business development opportunity.
So essentially, I can figure out exactly the target audience or the person I want to get in front of, figure out where the demand is, and I can serve that by real time actually hearing what people are talking about online.
That's right. Ear to the railroad. Go through there and call through and get your intel. Can't have strategy without intelligence. So now you're qualifying all these different leads for you, which you can capitalize on. So your real-time sales leads, your business development opportunities, your co-marketing opportunities, right? Your media exposure opportunities. I can guarantee you that every single writer and journalist lives on Twitter.
Yeah.
They don't share their Instagram or their Facebooks with you, but they all live on Twitter. And the best way for you to ever get into the news is to be timely, right? Mm-hmm. So we like to catch them in what we call the moment of influence.
So if there's a trend or anything like that, that's the opportunity.
That's the time to get it.
Tie your story in with that.
If you surf, right? You got to catch the set just right if you're going to catch that wave. Okay. If you miss that set, you miss the wave.
And that's why it's so important to be listening to real time if you want to get in front of the right people.
That's right. That's the best way to capitalize on real time intelligence that's taking place now. Okay. So you've got your
Continue.
I was just going to say there's two more categories. You've got your media exposure opportunities. You've got your affinity group opportunities. Mm-hmm. These people might not be in direct same business as you, but they might be people that are interested and could also work with you. Okay. And then you've got your ambassador recruitment opportunities. And mm-hmm. these are your fans. These are the people that love you, right? And we can go out and find them talking about Mark Lack and using your hashtags, hashtag Mark Lack's the best, all that type of stuff. Yeah. Find these people. And then reach out to them proactively and then say, hey, we've got this new program. We'd love for you to help us share this new story that we're doing on entrepreneurship or this new event that we've got, or we're going to go and play paintball and we're going to shoot, right? Things like that.
Jason, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Great to see you again.
Thank you. Yes. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Business Rockstars.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should